Let's go. Just testing. Okay. It's there.
Okay. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Apparatus.
Carol, I would like to, for you, for beginning, many thanks about our conversation.
That's fine.
I really love to be with you and having this talking.
Mm-hmm. It's great and, that you're here.
Oh, thank you very much. I would like, first of all, that you tell something about you, about your career, just for the people in Brazil know what you do and what
mm-hmm.
your background.
Yeah. So, well, I'm at this moment, I'm mainly known for my work with the Amsterdam Lucas Stardust Quartet, with which I played about 30 years concerts all over the world, made like 20 recordings with CDs. We won lots of prizes, so that's why I'm mainly known as a recorder player. Since 17 years now, I'm a professor at the university in Karlsruhe for recorder and modern music. After my studies at Amsterdam Conservatory, I also studied composition with Tristan Keuris, a famous Dutch composer who recently died, but he's still very famous. So my main interest in music has always been my own music. So when I first started to play recorder, I was like 4 years old. And it was like this. I started, in fact, on a green clarinet.
Whoa.
With all colored keys. And I just loved this instrument. And I played on one of my own tunes and the tunes I could sing. So I just was playing around. But somewhere this plastic clarinet cracked.
Yeah.
Because it fell on the floor. I was a kid, so I just lost my clarinet. And so I was crying. And then my mother said, well, I have some other instruments somewhere in the house. And then she gave me this. This is my first recorder.
Okay. after our conversation, I take a photo of this.
Yeah, so this is my first recorder. And it has a great history here. You see the teeth of my first dog, because also my dog tried to play recorder, but came not much further than
okay.
just biting the instrument. So, but it survived everything, and it still plays. So, after my plastic clarinet, I started playing on this, and of course I wanted to play all the tunes I could play on this plastic clarinet, also on this one.
Of course.
So, but it didn't work because I could not play the low C. I just couldn't play it. I was crying, why is it not working? So I practiced and practiced until, yes, I could play the low C, and then I was happy again. And since that time, I play the recorder. Many people have tried to give me other instruments. So my father, after I've played many years on this sort of stupid little flute, you play so much on that instrument, why don't you play like transverse flute?
Yeah.
I said, no, I want this flute. Okay, well, then you went on. Then I got a teacher who in fact was a guitar teacher and a mandolin teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, well, I can also teach you recorder if you like.
Many people does that.
Yeah.
We wrote an article about this, just telling in a part of this article we tell to teachers avoid to teach something that they are not able to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know, it happens.
Yeah. But especially at that time, there were not so many good recorder teachers, because it was in the 60s of last century, and there just were not so many recorder players. Frans Bruggen, he was just starting to build a school. He had pupils, but they did not have pupils who already came to the music schools.
Okay.
So there were not really good players.
Many people in Brazil just ask us, what can I do because I don't have a teacher in my city?
Yeah.
So it's the same situation.
Yeah, it's
I think.
The same situation. So my advice for these people would be, what I was lucky, but, so my advice for them would be the same what I lived. Have a good music teacher, a real good musician, and he can also teach you the basics of music making. But the recorder player, you have to learn yourself then.
Okay.
So this was with me. This teacher with the guitar and mandolin teacher, he was also a composer. He was a good musician. And he taught me musicianship. And he told me, do this, do this, try this, play your own tunes, make your own music. So he gave me my first steps in composition training. And he learned me to be a musician. And my teacher after that was in a music school, and he was a violin player who also could not play the recorder, but he was a very good violin player. So he taught me everything he knew about music, but I had to transpose it to the recorder.
Okay.
But the main thing of that teacher was that he had a recorder and he could play one tone. And on a very special moment, when I was making the wrong sounds, he took his recorder and said, listen, Carl, this is how it has to sound. And then he played this only tone he could play. He blew in the recorder and it was such a lovely tone.
Okay.
I was amazed by that tone. I said, yes, yes, this is how I want to play. But it was the only thing he could play on the recorder. So the rest he just plays on his violin.
Of course.
Yeah. So this, and he taught me everything to give me the possibility to go to the music university. So he taught me on a good level. So I could come into the conservatory in Amsterdam.
Wow.
But he could only play one tone on the recorder, but he was a good musician. So this, I think, is a good advice for people who don't have good recorder teachers. So it's better to have a good musician to tell you what to do and find out yourself how to do it on the instrument than have a not so good recorder teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, because musicianship is more important than say basic techniques.
Yeah, I use it to say that for the people in Brazil, that they are mostly of them are just caring about fingerings,
mm-hmm.
and nothing else.
Yeah,
but the fingering is the most easy part.
Yeah, yeah.
There are many, many, many things after fingering.
Yeah,
and fingering can change if you need another intonation, another, if you do piano or do forte or anything else, you change the fingerings.
Yeah.
So it's not only about this.
No, it's about style and expectations of sound development, of how to use silence in music, how to make phrases, how to... Well, also violin players, they talk about breathing in the music. So music is a sort of a general language if it goes over the musical ideas in the music, and you can transpose certain ideals in instruments. Most important one for the recorder is what we learned from Ganassi. He said, if you really want to play a good recorder, learn how to sing. And if you can sing good, then you can play the recorder. So yeah. Try to imitate the singer. And this is always a very important part of music making. Try to imitate others. So if you can imitate on the recorder a good violin player or a good cello player, that's much better than trying to imitate a bad recorder player. Because maybe he has a better technique, but he has no sound. He has no style. His aesthetics are not good. So better to go to a good violin player and try to play in that style. So of tone development, of musical language.
Yeah. This is I think this is a good advice.
Yeah.
For the people. I have another question for you. It's about your new developments, about the some recorders, some special ones that I've seen in your workshop, in your studio. So I would like that you just explain what are you doing with Molinaur and your new developments.
Yes. So interestingly enough, this has to do already with what I was talking about the imitation of the other instruments. So one of the things I already as a kid, but also as a student and still as a musician, what I miss very much as a recorder player is the direct connection to my fellow wind instrument players. The recorder is an instrument that always was on the highest building level in all periods. So if you buy, or if you look in the Renaissance time, you see that great instrument makers who made like flutes, cornetos, they also made recorders. And the recorder was one of the most sophisticated instruments of its time. If you go to Baroque time, you see that oboe makers, flute makers, and recorder makers were most of the time the same people. So they made these three instruments. So the recorder was on the same building level as the oboe. This goes on. If you see the oboes of the early Romantic period, the same makers also made the flageolets and the recorders of that time. But now, since the whole early music development of the last century, there is a lack here, and recorder makers have sort of shut off the whole development of key making, of intonation, of the aesthetics of our time. And they just separated themselves, and they are on a sort of on an early music island, where they work in with old tools, with old-fashioned intonation systems, and with old tuning pitch. And so as a musician, when you only play that type of instrument or these, well, it's of course it's a great world. You can see this. I have like 110 of these instruments here, and I love them. So there's so much color and history in this. But still, I miss just the normal instrument of our time, that I can say I'm a musician, I play the recorder, and my recorder is built at the same technical level as the oboe, the same technical level as the clarinet. And this is still not the case. So this I wanted to change. I thought, well, as one of my last projects in my musical career, I just want to stimulate this. I want my students to try to push on the instrument on into a next level. And so I started with this great recorder that Maarten Helder made in the last century. So he won a prize with this model. And it was lying around in the workshop of Molenhauer, and nobody really cared. because the instrument was expensive and it was not really good, but the model really attracted me, and the possibilities of this model really attracted me. I said, well, this is something where you, from which you can build a modern instrument if you really put in the time.
Yeah, I would like to add here is I just met this instrument in 2010,
mm-hmm.
and I have the opportunity to buy it in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and we was amazed about this instrument because of the whole possibilities that it gives to you.
Yeah.
And since of that time we are using it on Quintessentia.
Yeah, yeah.
This and fits very well with other modern recorders like the Petzolds, square basses, and mm-hmm. other stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But even more important than that, it fits with other modern recorders is that the sound quality, the tuning system, and its ambitus, so the range,
yes.
Fits to other modern wind instruments.
Yeah.
So if it's very logical, if you use an instrument from Baroque time, this has another aesthetics, another sound aesthetics, another tuning aesthetics, or even the shape of the recorder. It's another aesthetic principle. The music of that period, of course, is different. So if you use a Baroque recorder together with the aesthetics of music after Schoenberg, well, of course, that doesn't fit. It's like if you go with your Baroque clothes to a dancing, yeah, it's people will say, "Whoa, what's he wearing? That's not good." So the aesthetics of a period, well, everything belongs together. So that's why I want to develop this instrument. So I went to Mollenhauer and I said, "Well, let's try to make this instrument a real class instrument, so that you can really say it's worth the money."
Yeah.
And so that's when I started working with them and added my knowledge as a player and as a composer and into this instrument. And I think at this moment the instrument is worth the money. It's a basis for further development. This is something that no recorder maker wants to hear. Also Adrie Breuking about her Eagle. I say the Eagle at this moment is a very good instrument with very good possibilities, worth the money, but it's not there. It's the basis for good development. And my personal ideal would be if there could become a recorder that is a sort of a fusion between the sound quality and the possibilities of the Eagle Alto and the key system and the flageolet registers that are possible on the Helder Alto. So if these two somehow could be combined, that would be an ideal instrument.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I you told me that you was working also with Adri,
yes.
about some new developments.
Yeah.
Can you speak something about this, about the Eagle, and what did you help? How could you help the Eagle, and what did you do with this?
Yes, yes, that is so for the whole development of the Eagle, it's difficult to say how things work. So Adri comes a lot here at my place. We talk about the music. I play her instrument. I give my advice about the positions of the holes, of the playing possibilities that a modern player really needs. that has to be in the instrument, about the key work, if it's fitting or not, things like this we talk about, and then she tries to build my ideals in the instrument.
Okay.
So it's a sort of a stimulating process in both ways. So she comes to me with possibilities, and I say, well, I need this, I need that, and I say I, but I mean in this case, all players who play on a certain level and who want to play music of our time. And with that I mean the music after 1920.
Okay.
So if you want to play, say, the old the Gordon Jacob music or the Steps music, the Stanley Bates sonatinas, so all the other stuff, in fact, that goes together with modern violins, modern oboes, especially the modern piano. I've never heard any Baroque type or any Renaissance type of instrument that really melts together with a piano. The only instrument that does this is the eagle and the Helder alto for me. All the other instruments, they just don't fit in this type of sound quality, in this intonation system, and also in this type of tone development. Because in Baroque time, people wanted to play the instrument for its clarity. This was also its rhetorical position amongst the other instruments.
Mm-hmm.
It was the simple flute, the voice of God who says this is true. So you were not allowed on the recorder to play shading techniques, because God doesn't make shadings. He says this is how it is, this is how you have to go. So that's the important role of the rhetorical role of the recorder in Baroque time, voice of God. You played on weddings, on funerals, and on very big events. There the people played recorder. You see this in the Bach cantatas. If you play the Bach cantatas, the only places where you have to play is when someone dies or when there's full joy. And this is goes always together with a very straight way of playing. Of course, the moment you in time where, for example, the whole tuning system starts to go in a gray area where pure fifths are gone. So if you go after 1810, where sort of equal temperament, where the pure fifths are not pure anymore, if you want to play recorder in that time and you play suddenly a pure fifth, everyone, oh, you're playing out of tune, because no one wants to hear a pure fifth. They want to have shaded fifth, something there. So that's also the time where in music the vibrato came in, because if you say on a recorder, dude, this is an A, well, no one wants to hear an A. Everyone wants to hear, this is something like an A. Yeah? And so maybe it's an A, but maybe not. Yeah. So the whole idea of truth is not there anymore, because the music is not based on truth, but on tempered scales.
Yeah.
Mm? So your whole aesthetic idea changes. And then, of course, after Schoenberg, where you have so much of shading techniques in all instruments, sound developments, where you have the so-called color music, instead of melody, you just change the color. So, and if you then have an instrument that is not able to change its color, you just don't belong to it, to the music scene anymore. So,
okay.
So changing colors, shading techniques. So that's one of the big elements of this one, of the Helder Auto, that you have a key that gives you a little more possibilities to make dynamics in your instrument. Of course, the very important element of that instrument is that you have a larger range. A great element, of course, is that you have now below the F on an F alto, the leading tone E to F. So something you always miss, even though there are so many players who play Bach cello sonatas, and so many times they really have to transpose the low EF to high EF because they have no E on the instrument, okay. Or then they make a sort of a shading on their knee and it sounds just stupid. And but you can do stupid things as long as only recorder players listen to what you're doing. But the moment you try to be a musician in your own time, and you try to be recognized not only by recorder players, but also by oboe players, also by trumpet players. If you want to have a trumpet player saying, "This is great," you will stop shading your flute on your knee, because it's not great, it just sounds like nothing.
Okay.
So these impulses are for me very, very important. So in Karlsruhe, in the music university, recorder is not part of the early music section. The recorder is part of the wind instrument section. And that's why I also have for myself, I have this challenge to present my instrument to my colleagues in the university as an equal instrument. So that's one of the other reasons why I really work so hard on the development of the modern recorder, because all instruments play music of all times, but they play it on their instrument of our time.
Okay.
Yeah? So, and I think this is the correct way to act. If you are an oboe player, you start buying a modern oboe, and if you're interested in Bach, you play Bach on your modern oboe, and if you're very interested in Bach, you buy a Bach oboe, a period oboe. If you're very interested in Mozart, when you're a clarinet player, you start playing on your normal clarinet, but if you're very interested, then you buy, of course, a period instrument, a remake, some kind of an authentic copy of a Mozart clarinet. But it's not necessary. And I think this is the way to act, also for recorder players in the future, that you have your instrument of now equal to the other instruments. And you play on this instrument all the music you know, and from now until Machaut. But if you're very interested in Machaut, of course, sometime, somewhere in your life, when you have enough money, you want to buy a real Machaut recorder. If you love to play music of the Bach period, of course, you want to have a real Bach recorder. But you should start with a modern instrument that really functions super well. So I think this is for recorder players in the future, for recorder teachers in the future, the most important thing. If this development does not work, I can assure you that the recorder will disappear from the professional music level.
Oh, okay. You touched on a subject that I would like to ask you. It's about the professional music scene,
mm-hmm.
about your work with Lucky Stardust,
mm-hmm.
Quartet, and you told me in the beginning that this you became known in the music scene because of the quartet.
Yeah.
And I would like you to share something with that you passed with the group, or I don't know, some goals that you had on the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you just start to play together, or why did you decide to stop? It's up to you. I think all the Brazilian people would like to know a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And the behind the scenes,
yeah,
of your group and of your career.
Yeah.
So, please.
Yeah. So, well, of course, more than 30 years playing together is really a lot of stuff. So,
yeah,
so it's hard to choose about things. But what I can tell a few things, and you can pick out what you like, maybe.
Yeah.
So, how we started, because we were all students in Amsterdam in the same music university, and just our teachers, Walter van Houwe and Kees Boeke. So our main teacher was Kees Boeke. He wanted to have a 6-part consort to teach, and he just picked 6 players, and he said, "You and you and you and you, you have to play together." And next month, because we only had one lesson every month,
mm-hmm.
Next month you have to play this 6-part piece, English concert music. Okay, so we started to find the music. But on the first rehearsal of the 6, only 4 came. That was our quartet. We waited and waited. Nobody else came, so we started to improvise together and do stupid stuff. And then next rehearsal, shall I go?
Just 1 minute, because someone is calling. Yeah, you can go on, no problem.
Okay. So then next rehearsal, 5 came, so 1 more came, but the 6th person did not show up. So again, we could not train for our lesson. And then 3rd week, again, only the 4 of us were there, but then we were prepared. So one of us had already took some 4-part music. So we played for a few hours, but again, we started to fool around and improvise and do stupid stuff. So then we thought, okay, now we want to prepare for the lesson, only quartet music. And we threw the other 2 away.
Okay.
So, okay, you're not allowed for this lesson. We wanted the lesson. So, in fact, that was how our group started. So we found each other in the 6-part concert, and 2 2 were thrown out. And it somehow had a sort of a magical spark. We all felt attracted to the sound of our 4 people together. And we had so much fun improvising together and laughing together and drinking beer together that we thought, well, we want to go on. And then Casey said, no, you have to play 6-part again. So he threw 2 others in the group. But then we said, okay, we do the 6-part for the lessons, but the 4-part music for our own fun.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, in fact, how the group started. And the name came up in the first concert evening of the class, the recorder class, because we had to play in the class, and we wanted to have a stupid name. So very important, it had to be stupid, it had to be sort of funny, it had to be very long, because we wanted a name longer than the Academy of St. Martin's in the Fields.
Good. Good point. Okay.
Because we thought, whenever we come on a poster together with the Academy of St. Martin's in the Field, it should be very long. Amsterdam Lucky Stardust Quartet. So that's we want to. Yes, and the Lucky was a fun piece we played in that time. because it was from Dutch commercials.
I heard about that. Yeah. The commercial that you played for the commercial, something like that.
Yeah. Did you see it on the CD? On the DVD?
Yes. I have a video.
With the little lion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Playing recorder, maybe. Yes. Something like this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Very
so,
funny.
Yeah, so we played this recorder he's playing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in the tune. Yeah, so this was how we came together. We kept on improvising. So all our rehearsals always started with like 1 hour improvising.
Really?
Yeah. Not only on recorders, but also on the electric piano and the e-guitar. And we also invented sounds with vacuum cleaners. The vacuum cleaner has always stayed in the group. Yeah. So, but we also made all kinds of strange, how do you call this, tubes out of the vacuum cleaner to all kinds of recorders, and we put the recorders on the vacuum cleaner. So if we put the vacuum cleaner on, of course, in one point it sucks, but on the other side it blows. So where it blows out we put the sound in the recorder, so we could add a few recorders to the vacuum cleaner.
Yes.
So we would, things like this, making stupid sounds. And so this was our world, in fact, and we're doing strange things and having fun together. This we did more and more until in the end we practiced like that 2 days a week. So we started at 8 in the morning and we ended 8 in the evening.
Really? Well, 2 days
two
per
days,
week?
2 days
and
per
two
week.
And 2 days, entire day?
Entire day. So we were entire day together. We ate together. Most of the time afterwards we went to the theater together or to the cinema. Or we.
Okay.
So we were like a family.
Yes, yeah. I can tell you that, just a small part. We in Quintessenza we started with two rehearsals per week.
Yeah.
One of them very long, and the other one not so long. But nowadays we are getting 3 rehearsals per week.
Mm-hmm.
But only 4 or 5 hours each.
Okay.
Not yeah. 5 is not 4 hours mm-hmm. each. So. We, because all of us teach
mm-hmm.
and have other works.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to keep
it.
But this is like sacred to get to the rehearsal.
Yeah, very important, because otherwise you won't get on a professional level.
Yeah.
So
we believe in that.
Yeah.
So yeah. We know that there are many groups that rehearsal just 3 times for a concert, and we don't believe in that.
No, that's not possible. Yeah.
You think it's not possible?
It's not possible.
In a professional level.
In a professional level, if you say we come together and we practice 3 times, and now we're going to play a concert, I don't think that is. That is possible for a recorder quartet.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. We believe in the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is possible, say, when you have done many years of lots of rehearsing and playing lots of concerts, and when you say, this is it, we don't want to develop anymore. So if you just play your old repertoire and your old recorders, then you can say, okay, we know each other, we know how to react, we don't want to develop anymore. Then you can say, okay, we only rehearse for a concert. But of course that is a boring thing, and the audience will get bored of that very soon. So also not really a possibility for a professional group, because as a professional group, you always have to surprise your audience.
Okay.
Always have to come with new ideas, even if it's on a very tiny level, but you have to surprise and have to be on the edge of the possibilities. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very important. What always was very important for us as well, that was the question of historical performance. Because we...
This is an very important thing in a matter of our recorded quartet.
Yeah.
Before, just because of many things that you told before about the modern instruments and mm-hmm. early instruments.
Yeah.
So, please, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there are, especially when we started this, the whole early music movement, and the fact that non-musicians... And then I mean the musical theorists were interested in the musical history and in the musical performance practice of older times. And this was something new in the 20th century, because before that time, no one was interested in musical performance practice of older times. They were only interested in how do we do it now? No Baroque player could play on a Renaissance instrument. They played on Baroque instruments, even so far as that a French recorder player played only on French recorders, and they didn't play on Italian recorders because they needed their sound quality. So they played on their instruments, and of course France in that time was very famous. So in all courts, people started to talk French and eat French food, so also make French music. So then the French style was promoted all over Europe, except for France. Except for England. There they were still mostly impressed by the Italian way of recorder making. But this aside, so in all times, people were interested in their own instruments, in their own style, but in the 20th century there came this new development that people were interested in really playing styles of former periods. How did they really do it? Then this was the time where Frans Bruggen and some other great players and composers and musicians of his time started to in Holland to make the Nutcracker operations. Do you know about
yes,
this?
Yes, yeah. I know.
Hmm? And
maybe I can link to for this movement in the article. That's fine. You don't need to go on
yeah.
in this subject.
Yeah, yeah. So the main thing he said then: every note that the Amsterdam Concertgebouw Orchestra plays is a lie. And what he meant by that was that they didn't play according to what it very probably would have sound in former times. They just played how they liked at this time. So the historical performance practice, reading old books, really looking at old prints, at old pictures, trying to remake old instruments. How do you play on them? How do you articulate? So there, a whole new world of music making came in the musical world. And so musicians were not only musicians, but they were also musicologists. And they worked, or they worked together with musicologists to find out how music was in former times. Now this is at one point very interesting, but on the other hand, as a musician, you are very much put in a sort of a museum territory. So if you perform as a musician exactly according to the rules of the books and of the musicologists and of the music theorists, where are you as a human being? So where is your musical feeling? It's sort of a very strange way of acting. And also there is this problem when you as a musician, for example, with our group, we did a lot of research together with Spanish musicologists on music of Spain around 1500. We made a recording, so a CD with Spanish music from 1500 to 1600 on a very deep musicology's level. But when you as a musician work like 6 years on ideas and musical research, you know so much. You cannot expect the audience to do this, so then you know so much, and then you bring your music for an audience, but this audience is absolutely clean. They have not written all these books you have, so they cannot understand the deepness of your action. So there's you create a very big gap between yourself as a musician and the audience. You understand what
yes,
I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah? So I agree with you.
Yeah. So this is a problem of this sort of a museum art. So the more you know, the more you can do, the deeper and the more intelligent and the more delicate you perform the music, the more sophisticated you play the music, the less the audience understands what you're doing, because it's another time. So, and this was for our group always a sort of little bit of problem, that when you really go deep in the music, the audience doesn't understand it anymore. So we always tried to find this balance, how to bring our musical ideas to a large audience, because we didn't want to play for two people who sit there with thick glasses and who have read all the books.
Yeah.
We wanted to play and enjoy lots of people with our music. And so then we thought, it's not only the written thing what you have to do, it's also the impact on the audience you have to try to analyze. So if a person like Ganassi plays his recorder, or if the Bassanos, when they play with their family on their recorders or their gambas, what was the impact at that time on the audience? And then we tried to transpose this impact to the audience of this time, and try to find out how can we add to the historical performance practice elements that stimulate or that give this extra, so that people are sort of amazed again about the old music. Because of course, if you are telling an old joke, everyone knows the joke, so no one's laughing anymore. This is a little bit the case with early music. If you have to add something new to the old joke that no one really thought of, or tell the joke completely the other way around. Or maybe don't tell the joke at all, but tell something totally different, but have the impact of the old joke. So it's a very
This is a very interesting idea for me. We think almost the same as you are talking about. We have guidelines.
Yeah.
In the Baroque performance.
Yeah.
And early music, of course.
Yeah.
We need to.
Yeah.
We use the right instruments. We try to use the right instruments of in a way, but we don't need to be stuck in the old books and just to play as are written there.
Yeah.
But I think in our case, there is something different, that we are too far away from your place.
Mm.
So I have some kind of... when I am too far away from the place that this music was composed, it's a tradition, I have some kind of freedom to make my way to play.
Yeah.
It's the same when some European are playing Brazilian music, for example.
Yeah.
He will play a different way.
Yeah.
Not as Brazilian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's okay.
Yeah.
Parts of this scenario. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's a little bit like food.
Yes.
If you go to Italy and you really eat great Italian food in Italy, it's great. But if you see that an Italian cook comes to Germany and he wants many German people to eat his food, he has to add something German to his Italian style.
Yeah.
So Italian food in Germany does not taste the same as the Italian food in Italy. Because here the people have a little bit another taste, but they won't have the feeling of the Italian food. So this is, I think, a little bit for music as well. So if you take music from one country to another, you are allowed to make the music a little bit different. And if you take the music from one time to your own time, you are allowed to make it a little bit different. And if you don't do it, if you say, I just am very strict, this is new. So for example, if you're a Chinese and say, this is the food I eat in China and exactly this is here. Of course, your restaurant will be empty because no one is interested in real Chinese food. They're interested in the idea of real Chinese food. And this is the same with music. No one is interested in the reality. Everyone is interested in the idea of the reality.
I think, some kind of fantasy.
Fantasy, yes.
I think this is a right word to know.
Yeah.
A kind of fantasy about something.
Yeah.
When you are playing a concert, you are giving the audience some kind of fantasy about something.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the very important elements of giving music and playing music. Already the word playing is a very important word. You're playful, so you're fanciful. Even so many pieces, they're called fantasy. So it's what you are doing with the audience is creating a fantasy and give the audience the possibility to use their fantasy. That's also one of the very important things we try to do with the quartet. You can play music like a book, or you can play music like a movie. And of course, in the movie, you see things so clear. You see the persons, the characters, the way they act. So your own fantasy is downgraded. But if you read a book, the descriptions are not so clear. So your own fantasy is on a much higher level. And you can create your own persons in the book. And this is one of the things we also try to do with our quartet, to play in such a manner that the audience gets the possibility to be creative themselves and to use their own fantasy to make the music alive.
Okay.
Yeah. A rule for us was, don't be too exact. Don't be too descriptive. Always make a counter move. Even in body language. So if we always looked at each other, and also video, films looked at the quartet, how are we moving, So the moment that we saw that, for example, two people were sitting with their legs crossed and made the same movement at the same time, we said, oh no, forbidden. If one sits like this, the other one has to sit with his legs in another way. And if one makes his gestures like this, the other one has to make his gestures like this or like this. So that you have a large scale, large ambitus of movements on stage and not just one. So that people can, you know, if it's like if you make a fist and you hit on the table and you say, this is right. Now everything was pointed at the same direction. So my accent, my word this, and the fist on the table, they're all in one direction. So there's no escape for the audience. This is the effect. But if you go like, this is what I'm talking about. So you have a fist that goes away and your other arm goes in that direction and maybe your voice goes down. This is simple. Then the whole words you're talking about, they suddenly start floating around, and people have to combine the elements again. And this was what we always tried with the quartet.
Oh, this is a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And I think this have many, many connections about what we was talking about last night, about communication with the audience.
Yeah.
And about how to act on the stage.
Yeah.
I think that is very connected.
Yeah.
But in our group, we was discussing too much about this. What we want to just to play together, or each of us have some freedom, or must have this freedom, or I can get it, just some parts. And this is a kind of, I think we need to ask ourselves any day, every day.
Yeah.
Because if you don't ask you every day, you will lose it.
Yeah.
It's very easy to just lose it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
As you said, you have a rule. But every time that you just notice something, you need to go back and read it.
Yeah.
Take read it of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, and of course when you play together, especially when you play together for a longer time, you always have the tendency to imitate each other. That's normal and that's good. We even made fun of it, that we said, okay, I will play like Daniel now. I said, okay, and now I will play like Paul. So that we just imitated each other, and we changed our roles. And so it was just for fun. And so it's very important. But on the other hand, you have to be very careful because also you take away some freedom from another person. So, for example, if in one concert you heard a great ornament on a certain place, and you think, oh yeah, that's a great ornament, and the next concert you play this ornament, then you have taken away his freedom to play this ornament. Or maybe he plays the ornament himself, so you have a double ornament on that spot. You know, things like this. So you have to be to give room to each other for his own ideas. And imitation is very important. And it gives, because also if in one concert I took away an ornament from another player, of course then I stimulate this other player to be more inventive and to think of something else again.
Yes.
So it also gives you stimulus.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this kind of challenge gets you, makes you play better and better.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
You
yeah.
always have to be challenged.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
But if this have if you are too much challenged, maybe you give up.
Yeah.
There is some balance
yes.
there. That
yes, sure. You have to have sort of winning experiences as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's very important.
Oh, well, yeah. I think for these conversations was great. And I have many things to translate now.
Yeah. yeah.
Maybe I will divide it on four parts, maybe.
yeah, or use just few things.
Yeah, you just select some.
Yeah, yeah.
I will see.
Yeah, see what you can do.
I think I will translate everything, that then I just select.
Yeah.
But thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
I think I will... take it for the group, because all the others will love to listen to you.
Yeah.
And okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good. So, would you like something to drink?